Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's cool fact of the day is that donkeys kill more people annually than plane crashes, which is why you should be more afraid of donkeys than you should be afraid of flying. And because that was a short cool fact, and we always have cool facts of the day, the other one is that you burn more calories sleeping than you do watching TV, even more so if you make the room colder when you go to sleep.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
I'm really excited about today's podcast because today's guest is a friend and a luminary in the field. Donna Gates is the creator of the Body Ecology Diet. This is one of the first diets out there that was really looking at the role of gut health and histamine and yeast in the body. And Donna's done work with all kinds of people, including autistic children, in looking at how gut health influences your brain. Now, you may be listening to this and saying, I'm not an autistic child. What's in this podcast for me? Number one, you may be an autistic child and just not know it, but more likely than that, you are an adult who has brain function, either problems or abilities. Either way, whether your brain works perfectly as you see it all the time, or whether you know you're tired and foggy some of the time, your gut health still impacts your ability to think. And that's why I've invited Donna on the show today, because she's spent many years in the field. Her work stands as the foundation for things like the specific carbohydrate diet and the GAPS diet and things like that. So Donna, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time today to be with us.
Well, thanks for having me on. I've actually been looking forward to this all week long, all weekend long. So I hope you ask me the right questions. I mean, I hope you ask questions I can answer.
Well, given the times we've sat down, we usually tend to geek out and talk about all sorts of unusual gut things. So I'm going to do my best to not ask you all the weird questions about specific species of gut microbes, unless they're relevant to everyone out here. But I know that in all the questions I've asked you so far, you've more than kept up, which makes sense given as much as you've studied this. First off, What's your background? How did you get to be the person who created the body ecology diet?
Well, I think a whole lot of people start off like you did, not well, and they go looking for answers, and I did. But really looking back now, I think, you know, there's a destiny sometimes to your life, because I remember being a little Southern girl with, you know, fried chicken and lots of vegetables. We had a lot of vegetables, but they always had fat back in them, and so really a bad diet. But I did notice that I was really into food, and I kept noticing if people, like my grandfather poured pepper all over everything, and his plate was black. And so I would watch people and see what was going on with them, you know, based on what they were eating. So I think at an early age, I was already beginning to somehow came in already, probably knowing that food was medicine. So I was very fascinated, went to college to study that. It was not, you know, I went to work in a VA hospital after, just before I graduated with the, you know, I was going to be a registered dietitian. It was a terrible experience. Hospitals are the last place in the world anybody would want to be. They had me down in the kitchen loading the dishwasher, and I thought, this is a sign that this is not what I'm supposed to do with my life. So I went to school and went back to school and graduated finally with a degree in child development, which is useful, actually. And then I just never stopped studying. And then, you know, I think twists and turns, like so many different doors opened at the right time for me to, like when I started work, 10 years into the work that I've been doing now, I started working with autistic children. So they came later. But, you know, when you work with an autistic child, they have everything that's wrong with them is wrong with is wrong with us too. It's just that we don't have that behavioral brain issue going on, not like they do. And so working with autistic children is extraordinary training.
So you view autistic kids as kind of the canaries in the coal mine, Is okay, so the things that
they really are. Okay. They're truly a sign that this generation, you know, the generation, for example, that your children belong to, they're really, as a whole, in serious trouble. And you know, the human is being, we're protected. And so we can't really see, for example, this is a little complicated, but I hope I can explain it well. Your wife, let's use Lana, for example. When your two little kids, when Lana was inside her mom, and her ovaries formed right away, immediately. Yeah. But in the fifth month, the ovaries fill up with eggs in the fifth month. So, in other words, Lana's mother's health determined the quality of those eggs. Yeah. And so then you met Lana, you had two beautiful kids. They really are coasting on two generations back. Does that make sense?
It's the whole epigenetics argument, right?
Well, it's just the fact that your children are showing you your grandmother's health, their grandmother's health, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes a couple of generations before we see that the kids are in trouble. So what we're going to see when, like your children, when they grow up, most in their generation as a whole, because your kids are unique, they are going to have trouble with fertility. They won't be able to reproduce. It's going to be a real serious problem. A lot of birth defects and sad things. We're looking at disaster, and everybody's kind of either not looking at it or they're burying their head in the sand, hoping that it doesn't happen. But it's going to happen if we don't do something. And I think that's why I'm really fascinated, because there have been, like me, I've been doing this work for over 20 years. There's a lot of us that have been doing work for a long time, sometimes on our own little planet doing our thing. But what's happened right now is a whole bunch of people are coming together, like you and I meeting, and Sarah Gottfried and JJ, and a whole bunch of us are bringing our tribes together, you know, sharing information, helping each other. So that tells me that we're really at the tipping point, and it's very exciting. There's never been a time where so many people are bringing information, even though there's a little bit of difference in what some of us are teaching. Mostly there's the truth in what we're teaching. You know, a lot of us say the same thing in different ways. So it's just going to be an extraordinary time for these children. I think just in time we're going to turn things around.
Well, I certainly hope so. I can tell you, not that worried about a global population problem, because the research for the Better Baby book really taught me, well, fertility rates are declining so precipitously that already 1 in 8 couples doesn't conceive naturally. They just can't do it. So you fast forward another generation or two, and we don't have to worry about there being that many billions of people.
I'm glad you said that. And I have a friend who's an endocrinologist, and he's really well known. He teaches a bunch of other ones. And he was telling me that they that what they're seeing is that many couples are actually becoming pregnant and conceiving, but nature's very, very strict. And so in that first 28 days of life, you know, yeah. if that baby's not going to be really close to perfect, that baby isn't, I mean, that the woman loses, you know, she thinks she's having a normal period. She has no idea she was pregnant. That's happening a lot too. So we are conceiving, but there's not a healthy enough embryo to become a baby.
Yeah, it's a scary ongoing problem. And it's not just even the women, men too. You get unhealthy men who are fathers, and then the chances of there being birth defects happens as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll say we agree that there's a major multi-generational problem. Let's take a child who's born and develops autism. They're probably born with a more hyper-focused or hyper-aware immune system, so they're getting some autoimmunity. They probably have some problems with their gut bacteria. They may have some problems with toxic metals or with mold toxins. Some external event precipitates an autoimmune neurological condition. Now, you have a series of things largely affecting gut health that can help to turn this around. What if you take those same types of things and you give those to someone who doesn't have autism? What typically happens to those people?
Well, you know, almost everybody today, without realizing it or not, they've got some gut dysbiosis going on.
Yes.
So honest, anybody is going to improve if they take sugar out of their diet, gluten out of their diet. And of course, you know, I'm a big proponent of fermented foods, and we have to go into that because there's a subset of people that don't do well in fermented foods at first. So I know you want to talk about that. But it's just, you know, even if you don't have a gut problem today, you could have one tomorrow. It's easy to shift the balance of the microbes in the gut. People are struggling with things that they don't even know is connected with the gut. For example, depression. You know, you may feel flat and just life is just depressing simply because you have the wrong microbes in your gut. Or obesity, you know, you will find many people saying, well, I don't eat anything. I really don't. And I know they're telling the truth, so that's not an issue. They really aren't eating anything, and they're not even eating bad foods, but they've got the wrong bacteria in their gut. And so every little bit they're eating, no matter what they're eating, is making them fat.
So, I think I was in that camp when I weighed 300 pounds. I really did eat less than my thin friends. And it was not about willpower or laziness or any of that. It was just about, sorry, calories in does not equal calories out, partly because of the gut biome, partly because of hormones.
But you were in a really stressful job. And, you know, stress kills the good bacteria, and that lets the bad ones grow. And so for many of us, we live in a really stressful world, partly because we choose to. You know, it's not that some of us don't have that much. Maybe don't have financial problems, or we don't have health. We have wonderful children, all the things that some people have a problem with. And some of us don't have those problems, and yet we do too much. You know, we watch TV and we watch these exciting shows at night that make our cortisol go up. We don't sleep enough. Or we just choose to do too much. I mean, I'm in that category. I deliberately choose to fill up my plate with too many things. So I create my own stress.
Yeah, you have a reasonably healthy gut biome, right?
Well, I take care of that because I honestly do have the knowledge and the science. You know, so years ago when I started doing body ecology, and I came up with that term. So this is why, again, I think there's always a little bit of divine intervention sometimes in what happens in your life. I even came up with this term, body ecology, before I put the whole thing together and began talking about the gut ecology. But we have an ecology on us and in us. And so I started, you know, I first got into the whole thing because I was trying to get well. And then along the way, met Dr. Crook, and he'd written The Yeast Connection. And I thought, aha, I have years of antibiotics, you know, birth control pills, stress, those things. I have a yeast infection like millions of women do. So I thought, I'm going to figure out how to get over a yeast infection, because his book wasn't quite strict enough. And so I'd had a lot of training at that point in natural medicine, natural healing, Chinese medicine, all that. So I thought, I'm going to find the answer. And I started from scratch, looking at the condition. Not that much was known about it then. Looking at foods and matching that up. But then down the road, I was constantly learning more and more, and I began to understand about the immune system. You have to have a really strong immune system to overcome candidiasis. Also, I began to stumble on information that was available only to microbiologists. We people did not have this information, and I started learning about these bacteria that are supposed to be in our gut, and they're not there in many, many people. And I literally had to coin a term called the inner ecosystem to be able to talk to people about this world that exists inside our gut. The inner ecosystem was a term I coined, but then I started finding science to show what these microbes do in the gut. And that's how it all started, really.
So if we take someone who, say, doesn't know they have a gut problem, and they do something to improve the health of their gut, what are the typical things that they experience?
They're going to feel happier and everything. I mean, literally, there's nothing that the gut doesn't affect. It's your brain, of course, you become more focused, you'll have more energy, you will... every single cell in the body, the mitochondria, they're all benefiting from a healthy gut. There's not a single cell that isn't harmed by a gut that's got problems, or a single cell that isn't helped when you fix the gut.
Okay, so there's two big things. People who are already performing well, when they do things to improve their gut, can get increased energy and increased focus. Right? Now, if you're listening to this, this is why I wanted to have Donna on the show. Because this isn't something that is just about autistic kids or sick people or people with IBS. The bottom line is that if you're eating a normal or somewhat considered normal American diet, you're eating all sorts of foods, a lot of them processed, and you're eating foods that have things that kill bacteria in your gut, and you're probably putting yourself through quite a lot of stress. So if you want to be a resilient beast, which is certainly a part of being bulletproof, is just building high-performance resilience. So, yeah, you might go through stress, but your gut biome doesn't get destroyed and you don't get destroyed. Okay, that's super valuable, and this matters if you're a professional athlete, whether you're some big-time business person, whatever. So, Donna, now people are interested. What are the two or three things they should do right now that's going to help their gut?
Well, I think fermented foods, of course, are a must. And food combining, I think, is a great thing to do because if you eat a meal, let's say a typical sandwich with a piece of meat in the middle of two pieces of bread, that's very hard to digest. Let's say you eat a piece of chicken with rice and gravy or a steak with a baked potato. That's a really complex meal. Typical American breakfast on the weekends is orange juice, maybe pancakes, French toast or something, maybe some eggs and bacon. That's really hard for the body to digest. So I'm a big believer in food combining. And I think using digestive enzymes is very smart. Those would be my three top things I'd say to do. But I want to point out, Dave, that I know you have a big following of people that exercise a lot. Overtraining and exercising, that's a stress on the body.
It is.
And that will kill the bacteria. So even though I think everybody is under a certain level of stress, and so I think people need to be mindful all the time of protecting their gut. Using digestive enzymes, eating fermented foods so that you're putting this new supply of bacteria in the gut all the time on a regular everyday basis.
So one interesting point for people listening to this, a lot of digestive enzymes are made from Aspergillus, the fungus. A lot of people don't do as well on those. So my experience with digestive enzymes is that, heck yeah, Don, I agree with that recommendation 100%. But look for digestive enzymes that don't come from basically a form of mold.
Well, those are your plant-based ones, but hydrochloric acid, pepsin, and pancreatin are not from that source. So those are animal eater.
Yeah, those are the ones that I take. Yeah.
Yeah, those are good. And so the ones that are plant-based, those are the ones that come from
Ones that come from Aspergillus, you're saying?
Yeah.
Exactly. In other words, digestive enzymes don't usually come from plants. They come from animals. So things that come from an animal, like from their digestive tract, are usually pretty good. Things like ox bile, things like pancreatin that comes from an animal source.
And they tend to be low as we get, as we stress out, as we get age. Those are the ones that we start to stop making. And so replacing those makes sense.
I've been taking those with just about every meal for 15 years, and I think it's just important because even if you have a somewhat healthy gut, supporting that is just a good idea. Okay.
No, I totally agree with that. Me too. I'm pretty religious about taking digestive enzymes.
Now, let's talk about food combining. And to be really open about it, I experimented with food combining a long time ago. I was really strict. I kept logs. This is like more than 10 years ago when I was doing some of the nutritional stuff that I was figuring out. So I kept logs, you know, don't eat watermelon with this, you know, never eat lemon and cantaloupe together, and all these other weird rules that honestly didn't always make that much sense, and I never detected a single difference in my health from it. So why food combining? Why is it in your top three?
Well, because to me, lemon and watermelon are fine together.
I'm kidding. I don't remember what it was, but yeah, watermelon had a special status, and you know, it was just like, really? Some of this is a bit excessive, but...
So really simply, fruit digests very, very quickly. So if you're going to eat a piece of fruit, it's going to be in and out of the stomach in about 30 minutes. So if you eat a piece of toast, let's say, with the fruit, bowl of cereal with milk, it's all trapped in there, and it's going to cause gas and bloating. And so you're fermenting that food, basically, in a bad kind of way. And then as far as meat goes, like if you have a piece of turkey, let's say, put it on a sandwich, two pieces of bread, same thing, like that's very complex, you know, that's just difficult. You're asking a lot of the digestive tract to do that. Now, if you've got a real strong digestive tract, then forget about food combining. But if you are sensitive, then it makes a big difference. And so what I would put with a piece of chicken or lamb or fish or something is just vegetables, non-starchy vegetables. And there's tons of those, asparagus, green beans, broccoli, and tons of them. And then if I were having something like resistant starch, I know that's a big term in your community, and rice or quinoa millet, I would put that with vegetables too.
And what about fat? Would you mix fat with that?
Yeah, fat can go with anything. Cool. You know, good fats can go with anything.
Yeah, you know, butter goes with everything, even watermelon, right?
Probably so. I haven't done that.
Sounds disgusting.
Oh, wait, you reminded me of something. I got to say this. Actually, that would be good to have with watermelon because watermelon is very sweet. Mm-hmm. And when you put fat into a meal where there's sugar, it slows down the assimilation of the fat. So, yes, that would be a good combination.
Okay. If someone makes a watermelon butter smoothie and drinks it, I will be shocked and amazed and only slightly disgusted. But I imagine we'll see that on YouTube, Donna, because we just had this conversation.
Well, I would rather them not put the watermelon in there, but they could use some other fruit. And then what I'd like to see them do is use medium chain brain octane oil instead. I think that would be a nicer, lighter combination.
Yeah, if you're doing a fruit smoothie, certainly putting some fat in there makes it so much more satisfying and helps to stop the food cravings. Because you mentioned fruit digests really quickly. And I'm like, honestly, you don't need much fruit. And if you're going to eat fruit, eat the really high nutrient fruit that's low in fructose. And that's why the Bulletproof Diet roadmap has them sort of ranked in that order.
Yeah, I love your chart, by the way. We're just like so close. And our thinking is 100% on that.
Yeah, we agree on well, I think I have some questions about fermented food we're about to get to, but we agree on like 99% of things. And it's those little differences where some people listening are like, oh my God, seriously, like who cares? But I'll tell you who cares. Like people who want to kick ass care because like it's those little differences that separate the winners from the losers. It's a hundredth of a second.
You know, another thing that's going on, a huge number of people, I want to say at least 80% of people have yeast infections in their body. That's another reason why fruit, especially the sweet fruits, are not good. You always have to realize that somebody who's not well from any condition you can think of, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, whatever you can come up with, they're going to have a yeast infection. And so you've got to always be mindful not to feed those yeast.
What about protein and fat as a percentage of it on the body ecology diet? Where do those come in?
So based on the way the body likes to function, I like for people to just begin bringing protein in their diet from 11 to 2. That's the time of the day when the body really is needing it. Well, it depends on what time you get up in the morning.
Sure.
But for the most part, by 11 o'clock, your body needs it, maybe sooner for some people, because the brain needs that protein to wake up and to function. Also, animal protein makes us feel grounded. But by the end of the day, if you switch then to the quinoa, millet, and lots of vegetables, and a little bit of fermented food kind of a diet, you're actually going to produce a lot more serotonin, and that calms you down, and then you start to go to sleep, and because you know serotonin turns into melatonin. I think we need that calming quality. I know that's true for blood type A. You know, I happen to have met Dr. Peter Diadama's father about 36 years ago. I was actually went to him as a patient because I was trying to find answers myself. And when I learned about blood type in his diet, I was really intrigued. Now, his diet, originally the father had a different diet than Peter has. Peter changed his father's diet, actually. I think actually the father's diet's more accurate. But from that point on, 36 years ago, I started asking everybody, what's your blood type? What's your blood type? When I started working with autistic children, I asked their mothers, what's your blood type? What's your son's blood type? Almost all of them are blood type A. 8 out of 10 of those kids are blood type A. And I put that out into the autism community. It's much more well known now. So to me, that says something, statistically says something. So I find especially blood type A needs that more of those kind of foods in their diet, the quinoa, the millet. I mean, they need them on a consistent basis. They don't need a lot, but they need it because it's got a calming quality to for their body.
What would happen if they instead just used a straight resistant starch, like a plantain flour or the high maize resistant starch or even potato starch, as a way of avoiding the more we'll call it the more aggressive fibers that are in seeds and still getting all the stuff that ferments? It's almost like resistant starch is, it's not technically a fiber, but it oftentimes occurs with fiber. So I've had negative results with most, including like millet and buckwheat and those other things. So I'm trying to understand.
I think potatoes are fine. That for that reason, we have the red skin potatoes on the diet because they're providing that resistant starch. You've got to watch out for sugar, though, because candidiasis is such a problem. And so, you know, red skin potatoes are the lowest in starch and sugar. So I think those are great, too.
What about lectins? I mean, aren't those a substantial issue for 20% of people at least?
Well, you see, now what we're really talking about are people who have gut problems, because we shouldn't be reacting to simple components of food like that. And when I find people reacting to histamine or lectins and so on, it's because they lack this inner ecosystem and they don't have the bacteria going in their body on a regular basis, hardy, robust bacteria, diversity of bacteria that's so critical. That's what allows us to eat a lot of foods that we're reacting to.
So I've read studies that say 20% of all cases of rheumatoid arthritis come from the nightshade family. Mm. Potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, bell peppers. And I've had so many clients and other people on the blog like, wow, I thought you were nuts. I enjoy my red pepper flakes, whatever it is. But I finally, for a week, tried doing no nightshades. And what do you know? Like, all of my problems resolved. And I feel like my little brain fog went away. And like, wow, I didn't know I could feel this good. So others are like, I'm pretty darn, I've tested it either way. I do perfectly fine with it.
So eggplant and tomatoes are two of those nightshades, and they have histamine in them. As food has histamine in it.
Sure.
And everybody, as creates histamine. I usually tell people stay off those nightshades for the most part, except for, the red skin potatoes. And that's just if they tolerate them. Like one of our seven principles in body ecology is the principle of uniqueness. So if there's something that we're saying, is safe for eating because it doesn't feed yeast, it doesn't mean it should be in your body because your body is unique and it might be bothering you.
It's kind of funny because on the Bulletproof Diet as a roadmap, like here's the cleanest, least inflammatory, least offensive things possible. Get them all right. Mm-hmm. And then like start adding in red potatoes or whatever else and see what you react to. And I find that a huge number of people react to things that they didn't know they were reacting to, which is kind of what you would do on a food elimination diet, which I did a long time ago in like the mid to late 90s. I was working on that. The problem is it takes months and months to eliminate a class of foods and then add them back in one at a time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of easier just like eliminate everything and add them back in one at a time. But okay, that explains.
I want to add one little thing too. I disagree with that.
With which one?
Somebody made about arthritis, because I know another cause of arthritis is oxalates.
Plants.
And another issue is very often that they're just toxic. They're toxins. The liver is not, has for a long, long time been able to really process toxins. And then you've got a lot of, in Chinese medicine, the liver affects our skin, our eyes, our joints. So that creaky joints and stiffness and everything is coming because our liver is getting more congested. So I think it can be a numerous thing, just one thing causing.
That was only 20% of all the cases. The other 80%, oxalates are a huge thing. And I'm, especially on the latest Bulletproof Diet infographic, Which, if you haven't heard, if this is your first time hearing the show, bulletproofdietbook.com, you can download it for free. When you check that out, though, what you'll find is, I'm like, you have to cook these vegetables because of the oxalic acid connection. And all these people doing this raw kale smoothie thing, like, mm-hmm. I've written, like, here's the protocol for removing oxalates and oxalic acid. Because if you don't, like, it is going to mess you up.
Well, actually, and it's not just cooking them. Like, believe it or not, sweet potatoes and green beans are high oxalate spinach. You need to cook them in water and then throw off water. And quinoa and millet, by the way, they're seeds. Okay, so here are your high oxalate foods. There's nuts and seeds, chocolate, spinach, and nuts and seeds would be quinoa and millet. So they, and then there's a whole bunch of other vegetables like sweet potatoes and green beans, as I mentioned. But what I'm telling people to do these days, now that I understand about oxalates, thanks to my work with autism, is I actually take a big pot of water, get that boiling like you were going to boil pasta, put in some salt, drop in your soaked quinoa or millet, boil them for about 11 minutes for the quinoa, about 13, 15 minutes for the millet, then drain all that water off. And then catch the quinoa at the end there. And then it's very nice, very fluffy and delicious when it's cooked like that. But also, you've gotten rid of the oxalates. You just poured them down the drain. So the way food is prepared is another art, really, to making food medicine.
It's the same with kale and all the brassicas. And dump the water. And I actually recommend something called calcium loading that I invented. The idea being, add calcium to the water, this calcium carbonate, which will precipitate out the oxalic acid. That way, any oxalates that are left are already put in a crystallized form so you can excrete them. Otherwise, the oxalic acid enters the body, binds with calcium in the tissues, and causes way more damage. So at least isolate the oxalic acid in the GI tract. And like, I just cringe when I see these, you know, a lot of my, you know, CrossFit friends are, I'm going to do a kale smoothie, you know, raw kale in the morning. Like, your thyroid, your joints.
There's spinach in.
Raw spinach too.
A big one. But according to the University of Nebraska, because again, oxalates are a big issue in the community, mm-hmm. autism community, kale's fine. So is cabbage. And
which species of kale, though, right? Because the lacy kale is not fine.
We probably both need to look into that. Yeah. But Susan Owens has a really good up-to-date list of, you know, that's a big community. Her work is probably the most advanced with mm-hmm. oxalates. But she's... Her, it's just to try, if they just people just type in Susan Owens trying low oxalates, they'll find her. Mm-hmm. And then look into that, because I do really think it's a very important piece of information that people are missing. Again, trying to be healthy, thinking these foods are healthy, eating a lot of nuts and seeds. I see people putting a lot of almond milk in their smoothies, and that's another extremely high source of oxalates. So what they're doing without knowing it is adding a lot of oxalates throughout the day. They don't really, and that little piece of chocolate, that little square piece of chocolate that we see the research that says it's good for you for all these reasons, it's also got a backside to it. That's one thing I want everybody to understand is every single thing we put in our body has a positive and negative side to it. It might be good for you, it may be harming you. And you'll keep seeing research on, you know, this food, here's its benefits, and then milk is a good example. For mm-hmm. some people, it's a poison. For some people, they do great with it, particularly if they ferment it. But we're also unique, so we need to find out the foods that are best for us. And that's where this whole new world that's opening up on nutritional genetics, it's called nutritional genomics, is very, very exciting, because we're going to be able to, well, actually, even now, we can get our genes tested.
How important in your methodology is the source of the saturated fat versus just saying all saturated fats are the same? Because clearly MCTs are doing different than butter. Butyric acid is doing.
Yeah. So butyric acid is very, very good for the gut.
Right.
And bacteria need it too. Medium chain triglyceride, excellent for the bacteria in the gut. The bacteria need it. And it's healing to the gut. Both of those are healing to the gut and protective to the gut lining. So that's a whole different category. And then you have to bring in factor the genes. So your genes, you genetically may be need more fat in your diet, and somebody else will have to limit the amount of saturated fat. And quality is everything.
What happens if someone who has genes for less fat that you're talking about, what happens if they don't lower their saturated fat?
Well, it's destroying the bacteria in their gut, And then there's the bad guys. The good guys go, and the bad ones take over, like Wadsworthia. And Wadsworthia causes inflammation to the gut lining. Mm-hmm. And then there we have, now we have this permeable gut lining. Things are going to begin leaking through. It's affecting every cell in the body. It's affecting the brain as well. Protecting the gut lining. You know, the gut lining is one cell layer thick. And where our skin, I think, has like 7 or 9 layers to penetrate it. The gut lining has one cell layer, so we have to protect that little one cell layer. The bacteria nestled into that, and it's very easy to destroy it. It's, even stress destroys it, but the bacteria are there to protect us. We were talking about oxalates earlier. I wanted to mention that around the age that we start crawling, we get a bacteria in our gut called Oxalobacter firmigenes, and if we take an antibiotic, and who hasn't? Yeah. We lose Mr. Oxalobacter, and he usually never comes back again. And so there's nobody eating the oxalates in the food. So a couple of other bacteria try to take over, like Plantarum is a good one, some of the Bifidus bacteria, Bifidus infantis. They try to do his job, but they never do it like he does it. And so, again, so many things that we're talking about come back to these bacteria and what they're doing. So I think the gut, the bacteria, and our genes are a key to bit of information we're always going to need to look at, and we'll be able to, we can now because the science is going there. The other thing is the bacteria in our gut have their genes. So if we have, say, 28,000 genes of our own, every single cell in our body has the same set of genes in them. So we have all of our cells with all of our genes, say 28,000 or so genes. They don't know exactly the number. But then we have these bacteria, and they've got way, 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 way more genes than we do, each one of them, and there are trillions of them. Now we have another thing going on where what we're eating is affecting our genes, our bacteria's genes, our genes and our bacteria's genes. So, you know, these are all the, this is like a new area of science that's just coming out. It's very exciting because it's going to clear up the controversy over should I eat this or is this good for me? People are so confused because this expert says this and this expert says that. We have our areas hugely where we agree and a little bit of area where we disagree. Mm-hmm. But it's going to boil down to what's right for your body, and the genes are going to be able to tell us that. And, of course, having the bacteria. We got to look at our genes. We got to look at our bacteria.
Definitely agree. More genetics and more bacteria analysis, hugely important. And when I talk with Bulletproof people about, you know, what tests do you want to do, you want to look at your inflammation levels, you want to look at what's going on in the gut biome, and you want to look at your 23andMe results so you can see where your detox protocols are. And when you get those things, you're like,
yeah, very important.
You can learn a lot.
Yes, very important. I totally agree.
Top three recommendations for people who want to perform better. I've asked every guest on the show except one, that question. So not just for gut health, just your entire life and all of your wisdom, what are the three things that people should know?
Not about diet?
Or it can be about diet, but whatever the most important things you've learned in your path. Sure, give us your most important.
You know, I think that the most important thing I've learned is that it takes courage to live in this world. There's a lot of things that keep, you know, obstacles that present themselves in front of us. And you just have to really pull up your courage from somewhere and keep on going. I don't see that people have enough courage. I think we are in a mess right now because people, they're not coming from a place of courage. I also think people don't understand the long-term effects. Like for example, I'm really, really concerned about the future of our children, and we're selfishly living, we eat what we want, for example, and the waitress comes to the table and says, what do you want? And your mom says, what do you want to eat? We shouldn't be eating that way. We should be eating what our body needs. And our body will tell us what it needs. And then we have to train ourselves. Like, in other words, tune into the body and say, what do I need right now? I need some protein. I want some kale. You know, I'm needing a little more salt in my diet right now. Our body does tell us what it needs. So I would say develop that intuition, that relationship with your body, and start giving your body what it needs, not what you want. That's a very selfish thing that we're doing. And then, of course, I guess I'd have to say diet-wise, you got to get the sugar out of your diet. You got to get the good fats in your diet. And I think adding fermentifits and having that healthy gut microbiome is really, really key. And I say that because literally we've helped hundreds of children who are very, very sick totally turn their life around and become well because they started with the fermented food. So I have to stick to that.
I am not opposed to fermented foods, Donna. And I appreciate this as a chance. The most important things you've learned, and you know, they may be the opposite of what I've learned. And by the way, like I said, I'm a big fan of fermented foods, especially when they're fermented with the good stuff. So
and then also, I'm a big fan of yours, David. I don't think a day or even certainly not a week goes by where I'm not constantly recommending the Brain Octane. I sat down with a little tea in my cup and added the collagen, wonderful collagen. You told me that people sleep better when they have it at bedtime. I tell everybody that because lots of people have sleep problems today. I'd say that's a bit of advice. You've got to fix, if you're having a sleep problem, you got to fix that right away because you won't have energy.
Yeah. Well, also your gut biome gets stressed if you don't get enough sleep, right?
Oh, true. Yeah.
So it's kind of funny. Yeah. That affects your bacteria.
Brain doesn't work right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you've got great products, and I appreciate that. And I'm always the first person to tell other people about other excellent products on the market. So your particularness, I mean, whatever you call it, your standards, you know, for yourself and for other people are so high. That's why you bring out these high-quality products, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, I appreciate it. And likewise, you know, the way you've hacked bacterial fermentation in order to create resistant strains to Bunkokobiotic. That's an achievement right there. And just anytime you can help one autistic kid, you've done something good, and you've helped thousands and thousands, and it's very well acknowledged. So, you know, hey, I'm an admirer of your work as well, and I'm excited to be on your summit tomorrow.
Great. I got to get busy about making up some questions to ask you.
That'll be no problem. Thanks a ton for being on the show today, Donna. And would you just drop your URL one more time so people know where to find you?
Just buddyecology.com.
All right. One of the original places to learn about the gut biome. Donna, thanks for being on the show.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.